It's time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
What a week it is. Let's get to it now with our three guests. Bob Richardson, Executive Vice President of Public Affairs at Edelman, Jamie Ellerton, Principal at Canaptus Limited, and Sally Hauser, Senior Consultant at Navigator Limited. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Tasha.
All right. So we're going to start here with some provincial stuff, which we don't do all the time, but you know the provincial election's coming, and there's been a lot of developments of late. Let's listen to the last words from people who are both in the race and out.
I love Toronto, and I love serving the residents of this great city. And as Premier, I will serve them in every Ontario resident.
I am telling you, I am going to devote all my time exclusively now as interim leader to fix what I have, what I know to needs to be fixed. I have no intention of filing nomination papers to run in the leadership race.
All right. That was, of course, in order, Doug Ford and Vic Fideli. Vic Fideli, who is, of course, the interim leader here. So much to chew on. This story seems to change, you know, by the hour in terms of what the PCs are doing. Jamie, I'm going to start with you, because I think it's safe to say that last week at this time on this panel, we would have had no clue that this was coming. What do you make of the developments and how they impact the PCs' chances of winning the next election?
I think you're right, Tasha. I think this was definitely unexpected this time last week, but here we find ourselves. I think there's obviously going to be an information vacuum as people look to see what is going on, what the party's decision is going to be. And first off, I think we all have to commend Vic Fideli for his leadership. He's acted decisively and is putting a very stable hand at the wheel to make sure that the party continues to operate and is giving candidates to know, keep knocking on those doors as we head to the June 7 election. It's my understanding as well that obviously on Friday, the executive said we are going to have a leadership race prior to the June 7 election to have a permanent leader in place. The Leadership Election Organizing Committee have done their work. They've made a recommendation to the party executive, and the party executive will review that recommendation today. So I think later today we'll learn more what that leadership race looks like. And obviously there's a lot of people looking to jockeying for position as to potential campaigns that are going to put their name forward for leadership, as well as those looking perhaps settling past scores with the past leadership. So it's definitely an unprecedented time in Ontario politics. And I think stay tuned. We'll continue to see how this fluid situation develops.
All right. Bob, obviously this is affecting the PCs, but it's affecting both other parties in the race too. So starting with the Liberals, what's the impact on Kathleen Wynne?
Well, I've been doing Ontario politics for well over 30 years. I have never seen anything like this 100 days out from an election. The Liberals are having an internal feud, which appears now to be over, but and they have a leader with a minus 55% approval rating. The Conservatives effectively blew themselves up last week and have put the C back into circus. The whole thing is just amazing. I've never seen a party get rid of both their leader and their president again within 100 days of an election. And the NDP appear to be in the kind of witness protection program. You just don't hear from them.
Well, let Sally speak on that one in a moment. But no, but for Kathleen, I mean, you know, arguably some people say, well, Patrick Brown didn't have as good a chance maybe as another leader. I mean, do you buy that?
Well, you know, I think that's possible. And the Conservatives do have some good candidates coming forward. Rod Phillips is a bright, capable guy. Carolyn Mulroney sounds like she could be a very interesting candidate. I don't think you can underestimate Doug Ford. I chaired the mayoralty campaign against him last time. He got 303,000 votes, and we only beat him by 6 points. So, he's a formidable opponent. For Kathleen Wynne, I think there's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity with the Conservatives being in a mess for her to go out and sell her policies, which are relatively popular, even though she isn't. So she's got to connect herself to the popular policies. That's her opportunity right now.
All right, Sally, I want to ask you if there's any opportunity for Andrea Horvath here. Maybe people will just say a pox on both their houses to the Liberals and the Tories and opt for the party that hasn't had a scandal lately. Could that be right?
Yeah, I saw a Canadian comedian put on Twitter yesterday that the slogan should just be, you know, hey, we're what's left.
Literally, or left and what's left. Yeah.
You know, I thought it was cute. To Bob's point about you're not hearing much from the NDP, that's 100% what I would recommend to them right now.
Why is that?
The week that was. I don't think there's any reason to go out and try to be seen as gloating or scoring cheap political points as to the misfortune of the Ontario PCs. I think what they'll probably do is leave that for another week or two, let the dust settle, and then I imagine you're going to be hearing a lot more from Andrew Horvath and the NDP. I think it's wise not to, at this point, try to be kind of getting out in the media and sticking your head up and criticizing or seeing to capitalize on you know, a very, very negative and difficult story for the Ontario PCs. But I would imagine you'll see them ramping up a whole lot in the weeks ahead.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll be talking about this in the weeks ahead. Interestingly, this has, of course, implications for the federal party, too. And you mentioned one of them, Bob, that they've lost their, the provincial party lost their president, Rick Dykstra, who happened to be a federal candidate last round for the federal conservatives. Now one of the most prominent members of the federal caucus, Maxime Bernier, is calling for answers from the party about that. So it's spilling over to the federal scene. And, of course, we also know the whole Me Too sexual harassment climate is boiling on the Hill right now with Bill C-65, as well as the allegations against Kent Heer, of a Liberal minister, former minister of disability for disabilities, who had to resign. Let's listen to what Justin Trudeau said about sexual misconduct allegations on Parliament Hill.
Well, at the same time, reflecting on the fact that I don't have a rule book that's been handed down to me from Wilfrid Laurier as leader of the Liberal Party on how to handle these situations. This is new for organizations to have to deal with in this way, and we are doing the best that we can on a case-by-case basis, starting from a place of respect. Every case will be different, but we need to make sure that we're doing right in every given situation.
Well, that's a tall order, considering so much seems to be going wrong. Bob, how is the government handling this? I mean, should Kent Heer still be in caucus? Some people say no.
I thought the Prime Minister did a pretty good job in his interview last night with Chris Hall, a very good reporter.
On the House,
I thought it was carefully crafted. I thought he was prepared. I thought he answered the questions pretty clearly. And I thought he was, I would call it, as comfortable as you can be on topics like this. But there's no question this is uncharted territory. And I think you have to take a look at situations as they come in and act accordingly. I think all three parties or four parties now will be putting processes in place and rules and regulations in place and codes of conduct in place to make sure that there aren't these sort of situations occurring on a go-forward basis. But it is uncharted territory. I thought the PM did a pretty decent job last night.
All right, Sally, do you think he did a good job? Also, how does the NDP handle this? Because they have a sort of distinct way of handling complaints by employees.
Well, the NDP is the only party on the Hill that actually has a union, and so there is that kind of mechanism. There's a place for appeal. In terms of the Prime Minister, one thing that drove me nuts, and it is a difficult kind
just
of...
Just one thing? I'm shocked. Okay, go on.
No, it was this idea, this is new.
And, right.
And to Jamie's point, I'm sick of talking about this. It's not new. A year ago, we were talking about Senator Meredith. The year before that, you had Scott Andrews, a sitting member of Parliament for the Liberals, who was kind of bounced from caucus. This isn't new in any way, shape, or form, and we're incredibly reactive. Every time, this issue of harassment, misconduct pops up, there's kind of, we'll put some new harassment things in place, and it doesn't seem to change. I'm sick of talking about it. So this idea that all of a sudden harassment in politics is a new thing, and geez, I don't have a rule book from Wilfrid Laurier, is, I think, entirely too flippant. I'm really sick of kind of it. Obviously, the Me Too movement has made it more acute. We're in a longer period now. But frankly, I don't have a lot of confidence that it's just going to die down again. And a year from now, there'll be some other issue that pops up and we'll be saying the same things over again.
Yeah. And, Jamie, to that point, Michelle Rempel also called out colleagues for staying silent on sexist harassment within stuff she's seen in the Conservative Party. So it's not new anywhere. Where does Parliament go forward from here?
I think one of the things we're going to see here is, because of how long perhaps there's been inadequate vetting and inadequate safeguards in place,
as they look to set new standards for vetting prospective candidates going forward. There, of course, is already the elected caucus in all parties, and some of them have been there for well over a decade. And so I don't think they fully yet know the scope of the problem they're dealing with as it relates to their own caucus members. I think the prime minister's remarks for the prime minister who continues to champion all things feminist and kind of believe all women and has co-opted the Me Too movement in a lot of his messaging, for him to kind of like reference Wilfrid Laurier and pretend this is new was actually kind of surprising. And I think we'll have to stay tuned to see what's motivating some of that kind of stuff going forward. But I think going forward, parties do have to take this more seriously. I think on a political level, they're going to have to look at how their political operations are structured, and they're going to look at how they're vetting all candidates from across the country coming forward, as well as those that are in their caucus, and have some tough conversations going forward so that we as a society can move forward. This isn't something that's just touching Parliament Hill. We've seen this touch media. We've seen this touch corporate boardrooms. We've seen this touching Hollywood. And I think collectively we all have to commit to doing better and have some understanding amongst each other as to what that needs to be going forward.
All right. Well, a lot of tough talk on the south of the border as well on a lot of issues. We're going to get into that when we come back, because Donald Trump gave his State of the Union address last night. Some of the stuff he said will be affecting us, specifically around NAFTA. So we're going to take that to our panel. We come back on Global News Radio, 640 Toronto.
Time to talk politics.
We will not tolerate unparliamentary conduct. I will not tolerate heckling.
It's Tasha's political panel.
We will work to fix bad trade deals and negotiate new ones. And they'll be good ones, but they'll be fair. And we will protect American workers and American intellectual property through strong enforcement of our trade rules.
That was President Donald Trump talking in the State of the Union address last night in Washington. State of the Union to him is looking pretty good, but if things could change both south and north of the border if trade deals like NAFTA go south. Is that going to happen? Or does our prime minister have all the answers? Lots of plans, apparently. We're joined now by Bob Richardson, Executive Vice President of Public Affairs at Edelman, Jamie Ellerton, Principal at Canaptus Limited, and Sally Hauser, Senior Consultant at Navigator Limited. All right, gang. So let's dissect this a little bit. Bob, you know, Donald Trump says fair. I guess fair for the United States is what he really means. How did you read what he had to say for Canada?
Well, I think he actually backed off a little. I thought it was good. I think we're having a good period right now on the NAFTA front. 35 Republican senators came out with a very strong letter saying, do not screw around with this. And Mr. Mulroney, of course, was up before the Senate yesterday in the United States. He did a very good job putting forward why NAFTA is important to both countries. So I think there are things you can poke the government of Canada on for not having done or perhaps not having done well. I think they're doing a very good job on this. I think their tough slogging, senator by senator, congressman by congressman, is paying off. And I think he backed off a little. And I think things are heading in a more positive direction. Next week will be important when the prime minister speaks at the Reagan Library. I think that's another great opportunity for him to pitch why this works for both countries.
Okay, well, he's already spoken a bit about that. Before I get to our other panelists, let's have a listen to what Justin Trudeau has said about what kind of NAFTA deal he would accept.
No, there are multiple issues at which point we will not accept a deal. I mean, there's been people out there, including former Prime Minister Harper, who said, look, NAFTA is too important. You can't walk away from it. You should accept a bad deal rather than no deal. And I've been very clear that, no, I am not going to accept a bad deal rather than no deal. We're going to make sure that it's the right deal for Canada, that it's the right deal for Canadians, and we're going to push hard on our American partners on this. And they're understanding that right now.
Are they understanding that, Sally? That was Justin Trudeau speaking to Jeff Currier on sister station CJOB. How do you read that one?
No, I don't think they are. In any way, shape, or form, I definitely didn't have the same kind of rosy feeling of comfort that Bob did after listening to the State of the Union last night. And it's interesting. He mentioned former Prime Minister Mulroney. What Mulroney said is nobody in their right mind would kill this, but of course we have to think.
That's
about
the caveat, I guess.
That is the caveat. We're not dealing with a rational actor, and I will agree with Bob that I think the Liberals have frankly been doing what they can. I think the approach of kind of going state by state is the most effective they can be. But ultimately, when you're not dealing with somebody who is making, well thought out decisions and ultimately does have the decision making power, I think we still have to be really quite nervous.
Okay. Well, you know, Trudeau spoke to the House as well on CBC. He said, I don't think the president's going to be canceling it as of canceling NAFTA, and that he has a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, E, and F. Wow, that's a lot of plans, Jamie. Do you feel more confident now?
Yeah, I think it was kind of curious if we look at where the U.S. was positioning themselves going into the Montreal talk. Of course, that was the news broke that President Trump was imminently going to cancel it, and the whole you have to cancel the deal before you can renegotiate a deal posturing kind of came out. I think Canada probably had a good week last week in Montreal in terms of demonstrating a backbone and a spine on issues and kind of starting to push back at some of the U.S. proposals. And I think when you see 35 members of the Senate Republican caucus writing the president, telling him that NAFTA is a good thing and that there are definitely things that can be renegotiated and improved upon, but at its core, this is a fundamentally good thing for both nations. I think that's why you see the administration kind of tone down some of the rhetoric. We are obviously at the mercy of the man in the White House, but in terms of whether or not he wants to trigger those kinds of things in terms of terminating a deal. But Congress holds a lot of sway in this, and this is where the Canadian strategy ultimately comes into play. I know former Minister Ambrose and former Minister James Moore have been a part of the Prime Minister's Advisory Council and will continue to ultimately speak out in the best interests for Canada. So,
well, it does seem kind of ironic, Bob. I mean, right now the U.S. has a 4.1% unemployment rate. Canada also, we just got some numbers in, real gross domestic product rose 0.4% month over month. It's the fastest growth in 6 months here. So both our economies are doing really well under the current deal. So why would they actually want to change it?
Well, because he made a number of nutty promises during the election campaign, and that's really what's driving this. It's common sense isn't driving it. What's in the interest of the United States economically is not driving this. Politics is driving this. And also there are some American industries that want to use it as an opportunity to sort of take a run at us. The financial services guys would like to have more access or access at all to our, financial services market, so on and so forth. So that's what's really driving this thing here is politics and some people seeing that there's an opportunity with this guy to maybe get greater market share in some areas in Canada.
Yeah, well, they do have a congressional midterm election coming up in the fall of this year. So, in November. So they're going to have to deal with that, and that could be explaining a lot of this. But I guess my question is, how could this impact elections here? And I'll start with you on this one, Jamie, because if NAFTA does collapse, I mean, how big an issue do you think that would be for the Liberals going into the next election here in 2019?
I think it would be a big issue. And I think that, yes, obviously politics drove this on the U.S. side of the border. But let's also unpack this. If you look at the Rust Belt states, a lot of these jobs are gone. And there's kind of like a popular consensus that these jobs have gone to Asia. But the reality is a lot of these manufacturing jobs have just been automated. And until political parties and public officials can come forward with public policy that actually gets people back to work in decent paying jobs on a similar level to what those manufacturing jobs used to pay, this is going to be something that continues to haunt politicians on both sides of the border. I think you are going to see this as a huge issue, looking at how integrated the auto sector is in the Michigan-Ontario corridor. If NAFTA gets ripped up and some of those supply chains lock up, there's going to be real job losses felt on both sides of the border, and I think incumbent politicians of all stripes will feel the pain as a result of that.
All right, last word to you then, Sally. It's true, automation. We were just talking about automated self-checkout stores and self-checkout carts in grocery stores that are coming here because minimum wages are going up. So, I mean, is fighting for these jobs a losing battle? Should this even be an issue in NAFTA?
I think it should, and I'm going to push back on that and say I don't know necessarily that automation is at a, as a direct result of raising the minimum wage. I think we were probably going to be seeing automation come in one way or the other. You know, my worry in all of this has always been, you know, Canada is frankly going to get the short end of the stick one way or the other in dealing with the United States. And my worry is that any concessions we make are not going to come, come for the Bay Street and business. They're going to come for workers. And so that's my real worry in this, is that ultimately it's Canadian workers who are going to be losing out.
Well, hopefully not, but we'll have to see. And I want to thank all three of you for your thoughts today, Sally Houser, Jamie Allerton, and Bob Richardson, our political panel. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Sasha.
Thank you. Thank you.